You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where we discuss herbalism, fitness, and healthy habits for life. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody.
Hi. We're back.
We are.
And we are doing this far away from each other. So I'm still in Oregon, haven't gone anywhere. And Paula is in New Jersey?
Maine.
Maine. Oh my God, it's just such a brain fart. I do know this, guys. I do know this.
Yeah, no. Originally from New Jersey, now living in Maine.
That's what it was. I knew New Jersey had to do. I'm so sorry about that. I definitely know where you live right now. So, Paula, how have you been? It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been really good. You know, we talked a little bit before. I'm really diving into the community, getting to know people, which I really enjoy collaborating with them. I get really excited about talking about ideas and meeting passionate people, and I've been doing a lot of that lately. Just went over to a nice piece of property, about 50 acres in Biddeford, Maine, kind of west of where I'm at.
And
yeah, it was amazing. I posted some stuff on my Instagram stories. I don't get a chance to do the official posting. So usually if you want to keep track of what I'm doing, look at my Instagram stories, and that's kind of where you're going to see that. Super fun stuff. But, you know, I don't know. I'm just so in love with Maine. Like, that's the only way to describe it. It's so green. It's so lush. Like, everything's just starting to kind of wake up and start blooming here. It's a little bit later in the season, but we've got a Rachel Carson natural wildlife preserve here just a few miles from my house. And I recently read her small book she has called The Sense of Wonder. And if you ever want to get a really nice, like, idyllic view of the coast of Maine, read that book. It takes like 30 minutes, but it's called The Sense of Wonder by Rachel Carson. And it's fantastic. And she just like talks about the love she has of nature and all of that stuff. And that's just like where I'm at right now. That's how I'm feeling it. But how are you doing, Danielle?
Doing good. Really, really busy. The 12-week program that I'm creating has officially launched. And I've, for anyone who's listening, you could always sign up for that. You don't have to wait for the next 12 weeks. But it's, you know, it's bringing the three pillars of working out and relationships with food, and then our mindset. And, you know, while it may be hard for some people to like drop into, because we just want kind of that quicker fix of like, oh, if I just work out, like that's all I need to do, or if I just, you know, eat differently, that's all that I need to do. And I'm really starting to get some good feedback from the mindset work and the meditations and everything, which makes me really happy, because I'm realizing more and more and more, just like with each passing week, with everything that I'm learning, how crucial that is. And then everything else starts to align with it. I mean, like, to just have people just fall into a cycle over and over again. And it's because it may be easy to, you know, to drop into something for a few weeks, or to do a 30-day, you know, food challenge or this or that or whatever, but without tapping into all the other stuff, the stories we've told ourselves, the way we look at ourselves, the beliefs we have about what we're capable of, you know, that's when people start falling back into their old habits. So it's been a really interesting journey for me. I call myself now a fitness life coach.
Nice.
And I think, you know, it feels like everything in my life has basically been leading up to this type of work, and I'm just loving it more and more. I'm still in love with movement and with exercise and with helping people get their strength and their power, but this other part of it has been really fulfilling, and it's really nice because I feel like I am growing a lot alongside these people who are on this journey with me, and I just am trying to continue to grow it, essentially. Right now I have 8 clients. I'm doing a 5-day free challenge starting on Monday, which is like a mini little glimpse into what the 12-week program is. So kind of like a little taste, a little teaser. So that's happening June 20th. If anyone wants to reach out to me on Instagram or Facebook, I can get you that registration link. But just, you know, just trying to put that good work out there, basically, and inspired by you all the time, because I see people just like blowing up your Instagram with how much they are feeling so good with all of your teas. And Paul, I've been wanting to tell you this. I'm almost done with like the 12 million things I had already bought tea-wise. I've been on like a mission to finish them. And then I'm coming to you because I'm done with just like buying regular ass tea. But I needed to get through this gigantic box that I had before I could justify buying anything else. But yeah, just inspired by you and everything that you're doing. So you keep me motivated. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's the really nice piece when you start working with people and you get excited about what you're doing and what they're doing. And then that excites you more. And like you said, being able to grow and develop kind of who you are alongside of your career and the people that you partner with, you know, and that's kind of the sweet spot. I think that that's what everybody really, you know, wants to find, but they're not exactly sure how. So I think we're both really lucky to be in that position and to be here, and then just to be able to connect, being, you know, 3,500 miles away from each other and still doing this, which I'm super excited about.
Yes, me too. And, you know, for anyone who's listening, like the work that Paul and I are doing, or just stepping into this role or trying to create something, we are so lucky, but it is so much work.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. I am just so, it's just all I do.
Right.
And, you know, just, I think we talked about it last time when we did a podcast episode together, but just how you can visualize and you can manifest and you can affirm all that you want, but with action, it doesn't really turn into anything. So we're lucky, but let me tell you, there's a lot of action.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, we could go into all the ways in which women are kind of at a disadvantage with like our hormone cycles, and how like right now I know I'm ovulating, so my energy level and my outlook on life is really great and everything's amazing. But as soon as I kind of get toward the end of the month and things start to drop off a little bit, I know it's going to be even that much harder to like stay motivated and to do what I need to do. And so that's why I'm totally in awe of like women who are just kicking ass and doing what they need to do, because I know it's not easy.
Hell yeah. I mean, I actually just, I'm trying to find it as we speak, because I actually just read something. And, you know, we're going to be talking about why diets are bullshit. And right. We're going to be talking about these different things today. And I'm not sure if I could find it right now. And I don't want to go too much into it. But I know we've recently, not recently, but I know before we had a podcast about kind of like the cycles and everything, and the way that women's bodies works. And the thing is that since historically women's bodies and the things that they go through haven't been given much attention,
right,
more things are starting to come out now, and we're starting to realize how real and challenging it is to go through the different cycles with our menstruation and with everything that happens around ovulating. And you know what you've talking about before, how I think that there are like, you're not just having that one week,
right,
but you have this whole cycle that you are going through where your energy level like moves the entire month. And it wasn't just that, and maybe we could do a podcast about this, but it was just about how like the things that you crave and the things that you want, like in regards to your food, without it being like your willpower or
right.
your desire to be this or whatever, there are biological things happening within your body that are affecting what you want and how you want it. And, you know, I think we could get in, you know, we have lots of ideas now.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So we'll get into that for sure.
But I'm loving this topic because for me personally, you know, diets are bullshit. I know they're bullshit. I've been on every single diet there is imaginable. If I can do half of the things that I've done, I know I have willpower to do certain things, and I know I work hard at certain things, but there's a real nuance to matching your body and your needs with kind of all the information out there. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that there's so much information.
Right.
And it's also hard because there is a lot of unlearning that needs to be done in regards to this topic that we're going to go into today. Because dieting and all of that stuff is basically what we have been taught to do. And when we don't do it correctly, it turns into this shame spiral and this, you know, whether we think other people are thinking it or whether we think it ourselves, it turns into this idea that we don't have enough desire or we don't have enough drive or we don't have enough willpower or we're not good enough at it. And it's bullshit because things are happening in our body way beyond our control. And that's what we're going to get into. So before we get into too much, I just wanted to say that, you know, we're going to be dropping into that kind of dieting, what's happening to our bodies biologically when we are dieting, kind of why that's happening from an evolutionary standpoint. We're going to be talking about things that you can do to support your body and to kind of fall into a place of more intuitive eating. And then Paula, why don't you give a little bullet point as to what you are going to be discussing that's kind of going to kind of support all of this.
Yeah, I really, you know, like we talked about beforehand, when I started doing herbalism, you know, it came from a place of supporting myself and my body and my family. And then as I learned more and more, because I'm somebody who luckily at an early age realized I love learning. And if I'm not learning, I get bored extremely quickly. And so herbalism has been such a fantastic topic for me because no matter what kind of path I kind of run down, there's always more and more to learn. And one of the biggest things is the nutrient content available in the foraged food that you can find, you know, these herbs that are considered weeds out in nature that are inexpensive, you know, and easily available to you, have a lot more vitamin and mineral content. We're going to be talking, so I'll list off some of those. We're going to be talking about just a few choice minerals and vitamins and things and why they're important for the body. And, you know, just a couple tidbits here and there, just to kind of keep you guys motivated as to why this topic is important, not just because, you know, from a political standpoint, there's food scarcity that nobody wants to talk about. And there's, you know, this socioeconomic disadvantage for a lot of people. And there's definitely ways out there, regardless of the ridiculous foraging laws that are put in place in certain areas, especially in either low income or inner city areas, to stop people from collecting their own rainwater or for growing their own food or whatever it might be. There's still options available. So I think it's going to be exciting just to kind of touch on a few of those things to get everybody a little more curious.
Yes, yes. And that's the best thing that we could do for people is to get them curious, I think, and to have them questioning things and questioning, you know, the way that they are kind of living their life, because I think being a detective rather than being like a judge is the best way to make like sustainable change.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So. And just for everybody out there, you know, still working on the audio for this, so I apologize if my voice might be a little bit louder than Danielle's, but hopefully you get the gist of what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I know that may be a weird concept if you've been listening to us for a long time, because usually I'm quite loud. When we used to record together, I was always very loud. So, okay, so let's drop into this. So I, you know, a lot of what I've been learning lately is coming from this Health at Every Size mindset. And, you know, there's this book called Health at Every Size, and I thought I had the book right next to me, but I don't have it right next to me. But in our show notes, I will write the author. And I think it's just been a great asset because even if it's not something that you are personally struggling with, it's just such incredible insight kind of into the food, kind of food politics, exactly what you were saying.
Right.
You know, the way that there's a reason why the diet industry is worth so much money. And there's a reason why there's a fast food restaurant on every single corner. And, you know, those trigger words that you find at the grocery store that try to pull you in, even though it's doing you a disservice.
Right.
So there's just a lot of insight into this book. And she had a really good kind of way of putting it. And she said, instead of eating for enjoyment and fuel, we regard food as enemy, a test of willpower and moral superiority. And I thought that was a big one, because so often it's like, if you eat a certain way, or if you feel like you're like super duper perfect in your eating, you feel better than other people. And that's not, you know, there are a lot of people who may eat quote unquote in like a really healthy organic way, and they may be shit people. So we need to remove.
You got some real asshole vegans out there, let me tell you.
Yeah, hell yeah. So we need to remove that like moral, what's the word I'm looking for? Connection, I guess, to the way that we eat. The idea of it makes us a good or bad person. And also, you know, in regards to movement, and I'm just going to throw this in there since I am a facilitator of movement, but instead of moving for sheer joy of feeling our body and power, we view exercise as punishment for eating or for weighing too much. And instead of putting energy into how we can change the world or how we can change our own lives, we obsess about how we can change our bodies. So I thought that was really, really powerful to open up with and to kind of like segue into this whole like dieting is bullshit idea.
Absolutely.
So basically, there's some research that shows that each of us have a certain set point for our body. And the thing is, and I think it's a really beautiful thing that's happening right now in a lot of ways, is that we're starting to embrace all the different set points of people's bodies. You know, you look back to the 90s when it was like wafer thin, and we had this idea that if you looked like you did not eat a single thing, that was like what was considered beautiful. And even these days, if you research what a quote unquote fit body looks like or a healthy body looks like, they all look the exact same. And it's just one, it's unrealistic. It's setting up people for self-hate and for disappointment and for frustration and for a lifetime of trying to change something that may be beyond your control. And I just want to preface this by saying that what I am going to tell you about diets today can be taken one of two ways. It can either be taken as like, fuck, I'm really frustrated. Like I've been doing all of this stuff. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, you can almost turn it into a place of anger and disappointment. And, you know, I get it. I fully do. But I want you to try to take this information as a way to give yourself grace and compassion and freedom, because you have learned that you're supposed to be a certain way. You've learned that there are, you know, that diets are the way that you're supposed to change that certain thing. And you've probably, like I said, shamed yourself and judged yourself if you weren't able to do it. And like this, I want this to give you the freedom to take that away, like to not judge yourself and to not shame yourself. So I hope that that's how this is received. That's my intention.
Yeah, I think we can both relate in that area that, you know, hating your body, hating yourself, using negativity and hate as fuel to get results can work. But at the end of the day, you'll never be happy with your result, regardless of what it is, because it's coming from a place of hating your body.
Exactly. And also, you know, I would even venture to say that you may temporarily reach that goal, but you're probably going to be like up and down for your entire life, or, you know, struggling in this cycle forever. Like, you'll reach it and then you'll fall back into it, and then you'll reach it and then you'll fall back into it, and then you'll reach it. And, you know, and that in itself will also keep you kind of in that unhappy place.
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So the ruler of all of this is the hypothalamus, which is a small area of the brain that acts as the intermediary between the brain and the body. And what it does is it reacts to messages by signaling body tissue to release certain hormones or enzymes or other chemicals to get the body back kind of into this homeostasis. So it's kind of like this chilled out state, like equilibrium, I guess you could say.
Right.
So when we are messing with our set point, we are obviously moving out of equilibrium. We're moving out of homeostasis. And when our body gets below the set point that is for your body. Now, and here's the other thing, is comparison is the thief of joy. You know, we think, like I said, all bodies are supposed to look the same, but your body maybe have a very different set point from someone else's body. So it can actually initiate, when you get below that certain set point, it can initiate the release of hormones that influence your appetite. And I'm going to go into a little bit more detail in this in a little bit. It can change how food tastes. It can change how much it appeals to you. It can lead your body to craving higher fat foods because it wants to get more energy because it's in survival mode, essentially, when it thinks that you're going too far below what you should naturally be. And it can affect your metabolic efficiency and decrease your desire to move. I mean, like, I remember reading all of this stuff and learning about this stuff, and my mind was blown because for my entire life, I just thought it was based on how badly we wanted it.
Right. And I think that's such a good point, because you've been working, whether it's personally or professionally, in kind of this fitness mindset for such a long time, and for something to come across your desk and for you to just be like, whoa, and there was this aha moment. I think it's something that we really need to pause and think about.
Yeah. I mean, especially as like a health professional, I mean, there's so many quote unquote healthy messages that just veil this toxicity and that just, you know, like almost like prey off of people's pain points and prey off of people's self-hate. And I'm on a personal mission to do the opposite and to, you know, normalize different bodies and normalize these ideas and to try to move and try to eat and try to live from a place of self-love. And it's based on my own experience of hating myself forever and ever and ever, and just witnessing people's struggles throughout this journey. And so, yeah, as if any fitness professional is listening to this, like, keep that in mind.
Yeah, I really like that idea of, you know, looking at, like, does size matter when it comes to body? You and I are two totally, completely different body types. And for anybody who's seen photos of us online or some of the stuff that we do, that's, you know, very easy to tell. But, you know, one of the things that paradigm that comes into play is, you know, why are we so concerned with the unhealthiness of a larger body? But with society and the way that we look at diets and food and nutrition, you know, larger bodies are still very undernourished. Mm-hmm. And this is the piece that we want to dive into here in just a second.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a reason for that. And again, it's like society playing this cruel trick on people of creating all these highly processed foods with added sugar and, like, you know, all the fats that are not good for our bodies, because there's a time and a place and a need for fat in our body. But they're basically just creating these foods that make you want them more and more and more and more, but have like zero nutrient content, right? Or like integrity, nutritious integrity to them. So it's this, and again, we blame ourselves, but you talked about it earlier. So socioeconomic reasons that people may go to certain types of food, or food scarcity, or living in a food desert, which we've spoken about, I think, in past episodes before, you know. We're just set, like, people are just getting set up to either feel like failures or to just not be able to support their body the way they need to. And I want you to segue this into you, Paula, because I know that, you know, what you've been doing with foraging and with finding those nutrient dense foods has been like really paramount and really powerful.
Yeah. I think, you know, I post things every so often about counting colors or counting vitamins and not the level of calories, not just because I hate counting calories and it's the bane of my existence. But I think that there's a lot to be said for just the mental view of looking at a plate that's got color on it and putting together a healthy meal. I know when I work with clients, and I have one thing in particular, it's my mushroom cacao blend that I do. So it's got 7 different mushrooms in it. It's got all organic cacao, and, you know, I work mostly with women. And so it's, you know, I can put a little chai in there. I can put a few other kind of things to spice it up, but it's going to be a extremely nutrient dense kind of powder that you can throw into coffee, into yogurt, into whatever it is. And when your body is actually satiated in the way that it needs to be in terms of vitamins and minerals and that color content we see, you know, you're not going to crave as much as you would before. Your body's okay. You know, it's really interesting when we talk about cravings and some of those things. And nature is designed to feed you, you know, marketing and advertising and all of those things that have created our food industry, unfortunately, are not designed to feed your body. And that's kind of where that difference comes into play. It's the bioavailability that's essential in just natural things found in a trail that you walk. You know, if you're out and you're walking a trail and you want to kind of think about a few things here for the springtime, you know, here in Maine, we do a lot of seaweed. That's the thing. Bladderwrack is a really great one. I love it. I love it as a tea. I throw it into everything. Very high in vitamins and minerals. It's also very moistening to the body. And so, you know, if it's summer, if you live in dry areas, if, you know, it's interesting that places maybe like Arizona and other things like that, people who live in those areas could benefit very well from incorporating bladderwrack into their system, because, you know, it's something that's going to hydrate their body internally. And the vitamins and minerals that we're going to be talking about are really very basic. We all know what they are: iron, calcium, magnesium, potassium, chromium, right? I'm just going to stick with some of those. Now, there's a plethora of other phytochemicals and other things that are beneficial, because it's kind of that entourage effect that happens when you're talking about whole plant medicine and eating whole plants. And this is why we kind of, we work from this place. But, you know, we need that iron because the hemoglobin, that protein that's kind of feeding the blood cells, right? And bringing that oxygenated blood from the lungs elsewhere in the body. So you need it, right? You can't just say, oh, well, I'm deficient in my diet, let me take a supplement. It's not going to be as bioavailable. It's not going to support your body the way your body needs, because your body is an ancient system, right? And if you are trying to find all of these new aged, easy, quick fixes, your body's not going to know how to use a lot of that. And that's kind of the differentiation that we need to really make with why it's important. And it's so easy to do if you just take a few minutes, identify, you know, four or five different plants. It's that quality over quantity and portion size. I know we're going to be doing a lot more talking on other shows and other podcasts that we kind of go forward in, where we talk about different recipes and portion sizes and all of these things. It doesn't take much to feed your body if you're doing it correctly, right? Mm-hmm. And like calcium, obviously we know we need that for our bones. And somebody said the other day, like, what a bunch of bullshit that the, you know, got milk campaign made me think, if I didn't drink a shit ton of milk, my bones were going to crumble to dust, right? And it's so true. But you can get calcium in a ton of other things besides, you know, there's a ton of it in bladderwrack. You've got burdock root, which is out there. Burdock root is, well, burdock, the plant itself, is abundant everywhere. We have it in Oregon. We have it in Maine. I've lived on both coasts. I'm telling you, you can find these things anywhere. You've got chamomile. Chickweed is another one that's coming out right now because of the spring, summer. Dandelion. Everybody knows how to identify dandelion. Hawthorn berries, when you can get those on the hawthorn tree. We have quite a few here in Maine. Horsetail. I'm going to go into depth on horsetail here in a little bit because I think it's a really interesting one. It's an ancient plant, and it spreads through spores, and it's not a mushroom. So I think that that's really cool, and I kind of want to touch on that. Nettle, you know, everybody, when you talk about herbal medicine, everybody knows nettle. I think that's the biggest one. Nettle teas, throwing nettle into pasta, throwing nettle into breads. Anything that you can get, you know, that one's got a lot of magnesium and potassium in it. And I've talked about this on the show before. When we want to incorporate more vitamins and minerals, it's not just because, you know, oh, you know, potassium, I need my banana for the day. Oh, I don't like bananas, so I'm going to take a supplement. You know, you definitely can't look at it in that way. But because potassium helps regulate that fluid in the body, right? So muscle contraction that we're talking about, nerve signaling that we're talking about, protecting against stroke as we age, really looking at food as medicine, as preventative care, just as we would as movement, and nourishing our bodies, supporting our bodies in that way. It's going to be really, really important. And then chromium just is important to break down fats and carbs. So if you aren't thinking about chromium levels in your body and tracking those as religiously as you would your calories, I really suggest doing so. Because if you're sitting there and you're wanting your body to properly break down fats and carbs and stimulate the fatty acid and your cholesterol synthesis, you're going to want to know how much chromium you're getting throughout the day, a lot more than how many calories were in, you know, whatever you were eating. And I think that that's really important to kind of look at when we come from a mindset of extreme dieting, especially. You know, I'm somebody who likes to balance enjoyment of food with also intention with food. And I think that that's where foraging really comes into play, because you can make beautiful dishes that are so nutrient dense. And, you know, everybody knows what a raspberry is. Get some raspberry leaves when you go to pick those raspberries this summer. Throw it in a tea, feel good about it, dry it up, and even just throw it into muffins or throw it into a salad. We've got red clover is another one that's really great. Rose even. So these are really easy, simple herbs and plants that are easy to identify that can be incorporated in a lot of things. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah. I mean, I love everything you just said. God, I wish I don't have a pen on me right now, because there are some things that I wanted to comment on, but I appreciate everything you just said. I think it is invaluable what you just said. And luckily there is kind of this desire and a bit of this movement of going back to those things and, you know, going to the source rather than just getting the supplement. I mean, it's kind of, you mentioned it earlier. You said something about, you know, we want a shortcut and maybe like the supplement seems easier, so that's what we take. But like taking these actions and understanding certain things, like that is the shortcut, because you know, what you just said about preventative medicine, about not getting so far into a certain sickness or chronic disease or this place in your life that you can't come back from. Like the shortcut is doing some of the stuff now so that you don't have to worry about it later, and understanding certain aspects of now so that you don't have to worry about it later, or try to fix it rather later on. And when you said the counting vitamins before we talked, like, you know, counting your colors also, like instead of counting calories, I mean, eat the rainbow. That's going to give you a broad spectrum of nutrients as well. And I was just talking to Paula about this before we started, but I was listening to this podcast, and especially if you have young kids and kind of trying to teach them, you know, the right stories rather than the wrong stories about our bodies and how to eat and how to fuel them, like having a little color wheel with something that you could flip, like a game, and then just doing and flicking it for a meal and being like, oh, we need a purple vegetable this week. And, you know, maybe that could be a part of your meal plan of trying to find these different colors that you could incorporate in and get more nutrients. And Paula, this gave me an idea for us. So recently, guys, I did this 5-day women's retreat called Spirit Weavers in Oregon. And one of the classes I took was a cosmic kitchen. And it was this woman, Sarah, she has this beautiful cookbook that I purchased. And basically she's an herbalist as well. She reminded me a lot about you, Paula, and just this desire to incorporate that and make it accessible for people in their lives. And all of her recipes incorporate herbs and adaptogens, and I just felt so grateful that I've known you and actually knew what an adaptogen was. So I didn't feel like it's in this class, but you spoke about dandelion, and she has this like great like wild wheat pesto, and it'd be fun if we like did like a Zoom recording that we could show people if we like gathered the ingredients separately, but then kind of made something together.
Oh yeah. I know we've been like, now we're so far apart. We're like, oh, we should have done cooking classes. You know, that's like how Bins and Botanicals kind of kicked off. It was wanting to do a podcast, but also really just wanting to connect with people and sharing that kind of unique view of coming together as a community, you know, building something together. And cooking classes would have been so bomb. I love it. We did, we have a botanical chef here that I met with, and we did a foraging class where it was more like an herb walk, and we walked through and talked about some of these things. And then at the end, she brought some of that, and she did do a really great pesto, and it had dandelion and some garlic and a few other things in it. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, so good. And so many ways that you can incorporate these herbs into your meals so that, like, you know, you're talking about how foraging kind of makes it more nutrient dense, and you also spoke about how there's some places where it's really hard to do that, and, you know, whether it's the laws or whether it's the locations or whatever, or just the comfort. I've talked a lot about being nervous about foraging by myself and hoping I'm getting the right thing and the healthy part of the plant and all that stuff, you know, like to be able to incorporate herbs directly into your food. Like if you can't forage, you could still kind of elevate the nutrient or what word am I looking for? Elevate the profile, nutrient profile of foods by adding the herbs and adding like different adaptogens, even if it's like a powdered form of like maca root or is it maca root? Sweet. Okay. I'm learning, Paula. But yeah, so who knows? Maybe you and I can, I know this is kind of going a little bit off topic and everyone, you're getting a little view into our process.
Right.
But yeah, maybe we could record like a Zoom, you know, side to side. I don't know how people do that, but maybe we could figure it out and then post a little video of us making a little meal together, even from afar.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that that would be such a great way, especially, you know, just adding that layer of distance and kind of difficulty to it to say, you know, if you're determined enough, you can do some of these things. And, you know, you can make it as easy or as complex as you would like it when it comes to incorporating some of these. And I think that that's really important. You know, that's why when I start the conversation with people over herbs, I always start with tea because it's literally like the easiest pill to swallow, right? We've all had an herbal tea in, you know, some bag dried and dusted on a shelf somewhere that we threw in a cup. And we know what chamomile tea tastes like, or mint tea, or Earl Grey. And to sit down and have kind of this interesting flavor profile that I like to create with my teas that's robust. And, you know, as a loose leaf tea, it looks beautiful. And just to have a conversation over every little intricate piece of that and really make a meal of the tea and to know you're getting the vitamins and minerals and all those phytochemicals in there is really nice because it's just a simple cup of tea at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, your teas are so stunning. And I was actually just reading something else, which was fascinating. You know, the pleasure that comes with food or having, you know, a tea, the way that it looks and the way that you derive pleasure from your visual senses as well really plays a role in how much nutrients you're able to absorb. So there was a study done, and then we'll go back to what we were supposed to be talking about. There was this study done of a group of women from Sweden and a group of Thai women, and they gave both of them the same exact meal of Thai food. And obviously, that flavor profile was more enjoyed by the women who grew up with that. And they absorbed 50% more of the iron in that meal than the Swedish women.
Mm.
And you may be like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's their butt. Not their butt.
I love this episode.
Their gut biome. You know, maybe it's what they're used to, whatever. We have different, like, things in our stomach, different microorganisms in our stomach. But they then gave those women, the Thai women, the same exact meal, but they blended it up. So it looked like this kind of nasty ass paste. And it probably had a different consistency and texture. Ooh. And they absorbed, their iron absorption decreased by 70%.
That's insane to me.
So like for your teas to actually be so visually stunning, and anyone who has experienced your teas knows this, I bet you that to like light up that sense, even though it feels so far removed from like just eating or drinking or, you know, like intaking something, people may be absorbing more of the nutrients because it's a pleasurable thing for them, because it's a pleasurable thing to even just look at it, that, you know, you may be helping people on a deeper level than you think by making it so stunning.
I love it. Yeah, I love that. Because, yeah, it just like kind of makes me more energized and, you know, for what I do, which I think is fantastic. And then the other piece to grab from this for any parents out there is don't force feed your kids spinach. You're not doing them any favors. Right.
No, 100%.
If they're going to hate it, and there's studies out there to say if they don't enjoy it, they're not going to absorb the nutrient content of it.
Yep.
And I think it's really interesting because you know, you and I always kind of worry about being too woo-woo, and we want to bring in the science to it all of the time. But at the end of the day, it's like, if your body's not feeling it, your body's not feeling it, right? It's just going to be like, nah, I'm good. And it's really something interesting. So make it fun for your kids. Make it, you know, fun as a family or whatever it is. You know, do that color wheel idea. I think that's really great. And even as adults, you know, I'm always curious about this topic. And I definitely ask a lot of younger people, you know, 25 to 35, like, how many times do you get servings of fruits and vegetables throughout your day? I don't know. Well, if you were to count, if you were to guess, you know, how many people are getting like less than a quarter of the recommended amount as adults who know better, right? So I think the kids are probably eating better on a regular basis than most adults right now. So it really, really interesting to see some of that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, this conversation itself is just spurring like 500 other ideas for podcasts that we could get into and really drop into. So let me talk about a circle back. This is going to be like a four-parter at this point. So kind of getting into a bit more detail about how dieting can affect your body from a biological standpoint. So it slows the rate that the body burns calories. And I'm going to get into the reasons why this is happening, or kind of like the broad reason why. It increases your body's efficiency of getting all of the calories out of the food. So you digest it faster, you get hungrier faster, and it's trying to do that because, again, it feels deprived. So it's trying to get as much energy as you can. Because remember, calories can also just be referred to as energy. You crave higher fat foods, your appetite increases, it reduces your energy levels, so you don't feel like moving, because if it's trying to absorb all the calories to absorb all the energy, it's trying to decrease your desire to move so that you don't expend as much energy. It lowers your body temperature, so you're using less energy. So you may realize that when you're like really on like a strict diet, you may feel cold often. And that's kind of what's happening within the body. It decreases your ability to feel hungry and full. So it decreases this hormone that's released called leptin. That's basically the signal for fullness. And it increases, and I think I'm getting this correct, it increases the hormone called ghrelin, which is your like hunger hormone. It decreases the total amount of muscle tissue because, especially if you're not in like a strength program, while you're in this diet, you're also losing muscle tissue, and a pound of muscle burns more calories than a pound of fat. So it's going to decrease the amount of muscle tissue you have again, so it doesn't lose that really important energy that you need to function. And, you know, all of this kind of, again, and I can't stress this enough, the reason that I really wanted to talk about this and the reason I really wanted to show all of this was because we blame ourselves. We blame ourselves that when we diet, we crave things more, that when we diet, we feel so hungry, like we could eat the entire world. When we diet, you know, all of whatever the reason is, whatever the story is that you're telling yourself, that you're shaming yourself for, that you're judging yourself for, it's because those things are kind of actually happening to you and it's beyond your control. What you can control is how you fuel your body. What you can't control is the hormones that are released because of what you're doing to your body.
Absolutely.
You know, it was actually interesting. There was this Women's Health Initiative, and it was one of the largest, longest, most randomized and controlled dietary intervention clinical trials that has happened in our history, and it was designed to test low-fat diets, and it tested more than, I mean, way over 30,000 women. Like, I think that it was 30,000 women that they reduced the calorie intake for, so then I think it was another 30,000, if I'm remembering what I read correctly, that was, like, the women who are just eating normally. And they did this for 8 years.
Jeez.
So they found that after 8 years, within those 30,000 women that reduced their calorie intake, there was no change in weight, and the average waist circumference actually increased. Mm-hmm. And except for a small group of dieters in the population, you usually lose weight at the beginning and then you regain it and maybe then some, even if you're sticking to it, because of all of these things that are happening in your body. And with this controlled study, they all these women were given, you know, someone who's kind of watching them, supporting them, like making sure they were staying on track. Like it wasn't just that they were on this free for all for 8 years and you just had to go by what they were telling you. You know, they were in this and they were being helped and they were being controlled, and that was still the outcome. And the dieting may push your set point to different places. And that's why sometimes you're like, oh, I went on this diet and once I stopped, I ended up gaining more weight. Because you're messing with that set point, and it's just, you're messing with the natural signals and points of your body. And after yo-yo dieting and stuff like that, your body starts to set leptin, which I just said was the hormone that is supposed to tell you when you're full. Sorry, my literal words just got stuck in my mouth. It starts to set leptin to a lower level. So you're not getting that signal. And if we take it back to a biological standpoint, an evolutionary standpoint, think about the way our bodies work and the way our bodies function. It hasn't, you know, our lifestyles may have evolved drastically from when we first started being like Homo sapiens sapiens, like the type of human that we recognize today. But our bodies haven't evolved that much from when it got to that certain point. And, you know, you think about the way life was back then, and hunting and gathering and foraging, like you said, and you never really knew when that next meal was. And, you know, so you'd eat a lot when you could, and then you may not be eating for a really long time. So our bodies evolutionarily were created to hold on to calories and try to maintain a certain weight, because since food was scarce and there was never a guarantee, you were trying to just survive. Your body was trying to survive. It was trying to protect you and keep you safe. So when you go into a diet, especially a really intense one, it signals to our bodies that there's a sense of scarcity or famine, and that you're in this like starvation mode. And so our body reacts by sending out those hormones and chemicals to regulate appetite, regulate metabolism, regulate your energy levels, because it is trying to keep you protected. It's trying to protect you from dropping too far below your set point. It's trying to make sure that you don't die of starvation, because it thinks that that's what it's going through. So the good news is, and I'm going to pass it off to Paula now, and then I'll circle back around to this, is the good news is, and there is good news, is that we have the ability to listen to our bodies. We have the ability to take certain action to really tap back into the natural signals of our body, to tap back into intuitive eating, and to try to find a great place for ourselves. But I will come back to that, because I just word vomited so much information.
Yeah, that whole idea around hunter-gatherer and the way we live our lives and how a lot of people can't help but be sedentary. We've talked in the past about how crucial it is for you to just get that 10,000 steps a day. That is the bare minimum. You should be getting more than 10,000 steps a day, honestly, for what your body needs. You should be stretching. You should be doing yoga. You should be looking, you know, and I'm not going to pile on all the you shoulds. I'm not going to should all over you.
That was a good one.
Oh my goodness. I just had to. But horsetail is one that I've kind of started to have a little bit more of an interest in. Right down the street from me, we have a natural preserve. There's a lot of marshland here. There's a lot of marsh in Maine. That's how they say it. And horsetail, I love, because when we talk about kind of this prehistoric evolution, this is one really interesting plant. First of all, like I mentioned earlier, it actually spreads through spores. There's also rhizomes underneath. Like rhizomes are kind of like the ginger root looking root system. And it's really interesting. So it comes up kind of like a thick little green reed. And at the top, it looks almost like a little, like, I don't know, I would almost say like a little mini morel looking tiny thing. And that's where the spores are kind of released. It's not a mushroom, it's a plant. But this is one that's been around for 200 million years. And when it was first kind of developed and evolved and created on this land, on the world, whichever way you think that might have happened, it was actually as large, these were as large as pine trees. So they just were these vast things. And for them, over evolution, to be diminished from these massive, like, pine tree sized plants to now these tiny little, maybe 3-inch plants, but to still hold all of that ancient kind of medicine and wisdom in them, I think is really, really interesting. So
I love that.
Yeah. That's why I was like, I've got to mention horsetail. So silica is one of those that is a phytochemical within horsetail that helps the regeneration of cells. So for women in particular, you know, it's beach season. Everybody's worried about the way their legs look and all of those things and that connective tissue and cellulite and all of those. So silica is one of those that I know that people are like, oh, I've got to get supplements, or I've got to get this cream, or I've got this. Go and get the whole plant medicine. Go check out some horsetail, because I think that that's going to be really important. So it helps to with the proteins, it kind of binds molecules in the skin together for better water retention, flexibility, resiliency of connective tissue. All of these things are happening when you're incorporating horsetail, which I think is really important. And, you know, so in the very, very beginning of spring, you'll see it come up and you'll see kind of the fertile shoot still has the spore head on the top of it. And you can kind of clip those from the bottom and you peel off kind of right around, they like reeds, they have little sections and there's a little bit of kind of outer layer you have to peel off. And then you can just chop those up. You can kind of lightly pan fry them in oil. Some people eat them and they're completely raw. But the other interesting and important thing to note when you're foraging is that plants are filters for the ecosystem around them. So this is the same if you are looking to incorporate like cattails or some of those other things from marshlands. You want to make sure that there's no pollutants within the area. And you can, you know, usually cook them a little bit just to kind of cook out anything, especially if it's sitting in water in particular, you know, Giardia and some of those other bacteria that are found in water. You just want to make sure that you're keeping those in mind. But it's got a very cooling energy. And for me, you know, people always ask what I do as an herbalist, like, oh, you do tea tastings and you do this. But one of the main things that I like to do is an herbal energetic workup. And so we work with your body. We look at the energetics of your body. And then we look at the energetics of the plant. If you guys want to know a little bit more about that, I think it's like season 1, episode 2 or 3, there's some energetics episodes you guys can listen to kind of dive into that. But knowing that it's going to be cooling and soothing to the body, which is a fantastic thing to have as it kind of heats up throughout the summer. But you want to make sure that the shoots aren't too old. And, you know, so it's tricky. Sometimes you really got to go with first thing right in spring to incorporate these, but you know, they can be used topically. There was some research that was done on an herbal study that incorporated horsetail with menopausal women. And for those that don't know, a lot of the time when women have hormonal issues, PCOS, or they go through menopause or some of those things, they have hair loss. And so you and I both know, Danielle, we're always thinking like, how can I regrow my hair? And the silica within horsetail, that natural kind of aspect to it where it's more bioavailable, actually they saw a huge increase in hair growth in these women when incorporating horsetail after menopause, which I thought was really, really cool, because I'm sure these women have tried a ton of different things. So if you're someone who's like, well, I don't know if I have low levels of silica or a deficiency and I need this, if you have brittle hair, if you have brittle nails, you know, this also happens when you go through extreme dieting, right? We see this a lot more in women where you go onto a diet and you're like, oh, I need to cut. I'm in my cutting phase. And then all of a sudden you get into the shower and your hair's falling out, right? Mm-hmm. So some of these things where, okay, sometimes if you're in body competitions or if you, you know, your doctor tells you to lose weight, there's instances in which maybe at a certain point in time, you do need to be in a cutting phase, right? If that's the case, incorporate and put a plan into place to incorporate those vitamins and minerals in other ways that are not going to be calorie dense. They're going to be just dense in vitamins, mineral, nutrient content. And that's really what we're looking at. You can nourish your body with a very, very small amount versus eating a huge plate of food that doesn't have that nutrient quality. You know, these bigger bodies that are still just void of any kind of nutrient content is really interesting to me, because when you think about eating, we don't really think of it as nourishing our body. We think of it more as turning off the hunger signal, right?
Right.
We're going to eat until we're not hungry anymore. And it's really looking at that in a different light and seeing, okay, if I'm going to be doing something that might potentially put my body at risk because of the industry I work in or some of those other things, use these herbal allies that we're talking about, go foraging, you know, there's gotta be, and I work a lot and I work on weekends and I'm working late nights and you know, I get maybe one weekend to myself, a month. And if that's the one weekend I'm going out on the trail for myself and I'm foraging for myself and doing some of those things that I know can benefit me those days that I am working 12 hours or that I didn't get the breakfast that I needed or some of those other things, to kind of just make sure you're setting yourself up for success in your food and your diet, just as you would for, you know, getting your notes ready for the day when you have a meeting or filling up your car with gas before you go on a trip. It's that same kind of thing where it doesn't have to be overly complicated, just to consider how to fuel your body.
Yeah. And like we talked about so many times on various episodes, of doing it incrementally, like not feeling like you have to now buy everything and forage everything and feel overwhelmed by it, but pick an herb or two, something that's in your local area, something that you could feel comfortable with, and start there. And then once you've developed kind of that habit, then adding another couple of extra and then another couple of extra. And then, you know, talking with you, because you're just an invaluable resource, and booking an appointment and stuff like that. But if we talk about setting ourselves up for success, it's not about changing and doing everything all at once, because that's an easy way to get like burnt out and overwhelmed. But, you know, find the things that are accessible to you, take that hike on the weekends when you have it, and like turn it into something exciting and fun.
Right. Absolutely.
Speaking of actions that you could take for yourself, I just wanted to kind of wrap up my own little thing with just a few things that you could keep in mind. And, you know, we could have other episodes that delve into things a little bit deeper in regards to how stress affects the body and how sleep affects the body and how it actually affects your hunger hormones and the way that you feel full and all of that stuff. But there's some other things that you could do for yourself to kind of start to get you back into that realm of intuitive eating. So the first thing is to actually eat delicious food. It sounds, you know, I remember listening to or getting a message from someone, and they were just like, I'm trying so hard to completely eliminate this stuff that tempts me, blah, blah. And like, my response was like, but why? Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about being a child and you're told what you shouldn't do, and it just makes you want to do it more. If the same goes with food, especially when you're in a huge restriction or there's something that you just absolutely love. Maybe it reminds you of your family. Maybe it gives you a memory of something. Maybe it's just freaking good. And the thing with food, and we also have this, you know, again, I could do a whole episode about like emotional eating and those types of triggers and what you're actually chasing that you're not going to get from food. But food does have a lot of positive things incorporated with it. And it should be something to enjoy, and it should be something that's pleasurable, because there are a lot of pleasurable components and it brings us a lot of feelings. And you know, like, you could eat something and instantly be transported to this amazing memory that you may have. So eat some delicious foods, because it's been shown, studies have shown that eating pleasurable food when you have a physical drive to eat it. So again, and we'll do another episode about this, because we're going to have 10 parts if I go off on this tangent. But you know, distinguishing when you have a physical drive to eat something versus when you have an emotional drive to eat something. But when you realize that you have this physical drive to eat something, it does not trigger you to consistently overeat. And I think that's what people fear. And that's why they go into these diets, is because they think if they give themselves even a little bit of leeway, they're just going to completely lose their way.
Right.
And if you have, if you practice intuitive eating, and there is a distinction, because giving yourself that pleasure on a more regular basis leads you to be more intuitive with your eating, because you're listening to your physical sensations, you're listening to your natural signals. But if you're in this restriction, this is not going to work. So we're really, the whole point of this is to really try to get to a place of tapping back into our body and the way that it is naturally set up to support us. So, you know, like I just said, this will backfire if you have a dieting mentality, because you're constantly depriving something. So when you do get it, you like get all of it instead of just, and the thing is that you're chasing a certain kind of satisfaction that is probably more associated with something emotional or with something triggering versus it just being associated with the physical want to enjoy something that's delicious. And you freaking deserve to enjoy something that's delicious. Life is challenging. And, you know, we've been told that those things that are delicious are going to completely derail us. And we deserve to find pleasure in lots of various components of life, because this is our life. This is our, you know, whether, even if you believe in multiple lifetimes, you're not going to come back in this vessel. You're not going to experience these same things. And are you going to live an entire life of deprivation and cycling back into making yourself feel like shit? Or are you going to learn to enjoy things and support your body and fuel your body? And a good thing that you could possibly do is, I think I've talked about it before, but this 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to drop back into this because 80-20 may be hard for some people, especially if they're in the beginning of their journey. So like, if 80-20, if eating 80% like really nutrient dense, a fuel for your activities, a support for your body, doing all the right things, quote unquote, the right things. Mm-hmm. And then 20% of just like pleasure and indulgence and enjoying and experiencing. If that feels a little bit too hard to manage in the beginning, then go to 60-40. If you're in the beginning of your journey, then you work your way up to what feels comfortable for you. And you are letting you're setting yourself up for success, and instead of setting yourself up for something that may feel overwhelming. And none of this work is linear. It's not just like, okay, I did it, that's it, I don't have to put any of the work in, like I'm just gonna be on track forever. You know, it's all about ebbs and flows and giving yourself compassion and enjoying and dropping in and being mindful and all of this different stuff. So if you can't do 80-20, freaking do 60-40. That's better than 40-60.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really interesting, and we were talking about this, and I'm trying to control the level of my volume of my voice. So if you hear me like, hey, and then it's like low and high, I apologize. Hopefully you can still hear me. But we discussed re-listening to this podcast after we do it, slicing it down into a couple of layers. And then this next one that we're going to be doing, so if you're listening to this, keep an eye out for the next one. We're going to be talking about, and Danielle in particular is going to be talking about, the differentiation between portion size and the serving size. And I was just like, well, what the hell's the difference? If it fits in my mouth, it fits, right? Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm really interested in diving into that, because I want to talk a little bit more about some recipes and some other things. Now, I touched briefly on the vitamins that you really should be looking out for just as a baseline. There's plenty more to look at. But if you're interested in the list of, I think it's about 15 herbs that I have, and their exact vitamin and mineral content broken down, you can direct message me on Instagram at botanically_curious. And I will email it to you. Just message me, shoot me your email, I'll shoot you over the actual list. That's probably the easiest way to do it. And then that way we know who we're talking to and who's listening to the podcast and wants to get more information. But we will continue to kind of break down this topic a little bit because there's a lot of meat here. And I think we've all been to these, you know, I love that you did that 5-day kind of Kickstarter that was free for people to really start grasping onto things. And I love the fact that your programs are even more accessible to people that aren't in the area that you're in, because I benefited so much from the programs that we did together. And I'm excited to be able to have the opportunity to do that from a distance. And yeah, hopefully some people got a little bit more curious about the plants around them and how they can incorporate those. And, you know, if you need an easy way to identify things, the Picture This app is a good one. I've been using it for a while, and about 90% of the time it is very accurate. You always want to double check though. I would not use it for mushrooms. And if you're not experienced in mushroom foraging, do not go mushroom foraging. That's all I have to say about that.
I will say one last thing. Can I say one last thing? Do we have time?
Yeah.
Okay. So just since we're on the topic of dieting and of, you know, depriving, I remember I used to just like basically not eat for as long as I possibly could. And if I did eat, it was just in very, very small amounts. And I'd be like, I am so on point today. I had 5 Cheerios and a rice cake, and ooh, being like so freaking proud of that. And then, you know, this is maybe triggering, I guess, to some people, but that's what leads to binging and purging and bulimia and all of that stuff, because you deprive and you deprive, deprive, and then you go freaking buck wild and you go crazy and eat everything. So one of the things you can do to kind of, again, tap back into that intuitive eating is to listen to your hunger signals. So I know that sounds, you know, none of these things that you could do for yourself are like exotic and sexy and like, you know, blah, magical or something. They're actual things that you can do on a regular basis that are just going to work, and they're simple. We just need to put them into action. So start eating when you feel hungry, not when you think you should eat or because you are starving. If you start to eat, and I have done this so many times, even I'm sure we all have, even without intention, when we're really busy, you just put it off and you put it off and you're just in your like zone and you're getting your work done and you're doing your thing. And then all of a sudden you're starving and like you're bottomless. And starting to eat when you feel hungry versus when you're already starving is going to be a great thing to set you up to start listening to those internal signals. And also kind of list on the other end of the spectrum, not eating everything to the point where you're like uncomfortably full. So if you make yourself a plate before you get that second round of food, and sometimes you do actually want and need that second round of food, and that is perfectly and 100% okay, especially if you're a really active person. But before you get that second round, give your body like 10 to 15 minutes, like just hold off for a second and see, give your body a little bit of time to just start that digestive process and to see if you actually do need another bowl of food or, and maybe you do, like I said, or if you just haven't listened to that signal that your body is trying to tell you that it's full. So if you're waiting until your stomach is already growling, you're already past hunger and you're kind of you're setting yourself up for disservice. And if you wait till you're bloated or uncomfortable, then you're eating past the point that your body is trying to tell you that you're super, that you're already satisfied, that you're already full, that you already got in everything that you need. So, you know, my challenge to everyone out there is to try to listen to the body. Try to listen to the signals, because we all have them and we can all open up our ears and our feelings to them, but we just need to be aware of them. And just like if you have any, you know, desire to find your energetics profile and how to incorporate herbs and all the beautiful things that Paula does in her incredible teas, if you want to dive deeper into movement and your relationship with food, emotional triggers, ways that you could tap back into that intuitive eating, and then ways that you could change your mindset, because your mindset will affect all of these other areas of your life, then message me and I will be your fitness life coach, and Paula will be your herbal life coach. And with our powers combined,
twin powers activate.
Yeah. our powers will activate your powers.
Right. That's all I am. For sure. Well said, friend. Well said. And with that, I think, we're going to wrap up for today's episode. We gave you a little bit to kind of nibble on, and we will be back to give you a little more at some other point.
A little bit to nibble on.
I'm just like rocking it today with all this.
I know, you're on point. And I feel like we gave like, I think we left the people maybe overly full at this point. With information.
Oh my God. Okay.
All right. Well, guys, peace and love. We will see you next time. It has been a pleasure.
Bye, guys.